Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The year is 1990, and if you stop listening to this podcast midway through, we're gonna kick your fucking asses!
And welcome to
Unspooled. I am Paul Scheer.
I'm Amy Nicholson.
And this is the podcast where we normally are talking about the AFI's top 100 movies of all time. But as you know, if you listen to this podcast regularly, we take detours. And what we've been doing during the quarantine is exploring some cultural favorites. These are movies that maybe will never belong on a top 100 list, but they do need some attention thrown at them. And Amy and I have been hosting this new YouTube series where we are watching these classic films like Big and Clueless and this week's film, which is House Party. We actually are doing a little bit of a 30th anniversary retrospective of House Party. We have writer-director Reggie Hudlin. We also have Kid from Kid and Play here. Amy, I know that you're excited about that.
I'm so excited. I used to have the biggest crush on him. Oh my God.
So we're going to just jump into our live stream, which will be a lot of fun. And hold your thoughts about Goodfellas, because I know they're coming in hot. We will get to it next week. Amy, you had a lot of fans, a lot of fans. I also had a lot of fans. A lot of people out there split on this movie, but I can't wait to go one more round with you. And I want to assure everyone that we were not fighting. We were not fighting.
I could never fight with you. You're my Paul.
I felt the same way. People are like, oh, you were angry. I was like, I wasn't angry. I had to get angry over a movie. Anyway.
Oh, you don't know how you get angry at a movie? Oh, yeah. I can tell you all about it.
I can get flabbergasted. I definitely get flabbergasted. But I'm so excited to share with you this celebration of a movie that both Amy and I love so much. It's called House Party, and enjoy. Hello and welcome to
Unspooled.
I am Paul Scheer and this is Amy Nicholson and this is our spool party. We normally do a podcast called Unspooled where we look at the AFI's top films ever made, but we do something different here during the quarantine. We're looking at some of the cultural best films ever made. We've done movies about Big and Clueless. And we are also celebrating today the 30th anniversary of House Party. You might know me from shows like The League and Black Monday and NTSF SDSUV. And Amy, how would people know you?
Wanted posters? I don't know. Yeah, no, we're today watching one of my absolute favorite all-time movies of all time. I am so excited. I am so excited. I am so excited. So thank you for joining our House Party.
So, Amy, let's talk a little bit. We right now are in the middle of a pandemic. There are so many places out there that need our help, and we're trying to do a little bit of something to help people out. This movie, House Party, was an independent film. It was premiered at Sundance. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But we created a t-shirt that is raising money for Art House America. You can check it out here, Indoor Adventure Squad. So if you buy this t-shirt over at tpublic.com/stores/unspooled, we will donate 100% of our proceeds to Art House America, which is an organization set up by the Criterion Channel to help struggling independent theaters who are all closed right now. So that's what we got going on tonight. So Amy, do you have a quiz for me? I hear you have a quiz.
I have a tiny quiz. You know, I like to come up with evil small quizzes for you. So it's kind of racking my brain to think of something worthy of a house party, which, you know, as Daniel Davis is saying in the comments right now, was the last movie he got to see in the theater before quarantine because it was playing at the New Bev in LA. New Bev, always with the excellent, excellent programming. So I tried to come up with an evil quiz for you. This week, the evilest topic I could think of is I wanted to give you a quiz on important houses. So I'm calling this quiz, Who Said It? The Stars of House Party or House MD?
All right. This is going to be tough. I'm ready for this. Yes.
Okay. All right. Question one. Who said it? The quote is, you are basically a stuffed animal made by grandma.
Okay. I mean, that has to be the very dry wit of the very angry House MD. Am I right?
Let's see if you're right. You are. All right. You nailed it.
I got one. Got one.
All right. Question two. Mind-blowing decisions cause head-on collisions.
This is tricky because I know House deals with people in urgent care. So I know that he's probably seeing a lot of car crash victims. But I'm going to say this is from House Party. This is a Kid and Play quote. Am I right?
Yes, you are correct.
All right. Two for two.
This is my excellent Photoshop, by the way. So I hope you're appreciating it. Just realized I forgot the second quotation mark. Question three. Here you go. Don't get cocky, kid. So many headaches now, I'm asking for aspirin and more pills.
Oh, man. So many headaches now. All right. Boy, I'm going to go out on a ledge. I think you're going to throw me a trick here. I'm going to say that's Kid and Play.
You are correct. That is
what I am?
Kid, yes.
Yes.
That was, in fact, Kid and Play. That was, in fact, Kid and Play. All right. We got two more. You're actually nailing this. I'm incredibly impressed.
I'm loving it. Well, look, I'm a big fan of House and a big fan of House parties. So there we go.
That makes sense. All right, Josh, can we see question four? There is a code. Bros before hoes, man.
All right. Because I'm feeling so good about this, Amy, I am going to say that is House MD. House MD has to have said that.
Yes, he did. I can't
believe it. Yes. Nailing this quiz because it seems so, I love, well, I don't want to watch that episode. That's embarrassing for me to even read that he said that. All right.
Let's see if you can get a perfect score. Last question. Question five. If her DNA was off by one percentage point, she'd be a dolphin.
Oh man. First of all, I can't get over the picture of House MD. I'm going to say that's Kid and Play.
I have bad news for you.
What?
It is House.
It's House.
A Stone Cold House line.
No. Oh, no.
Four out of five.
That just feels commendable. Not bad. I feel like that's how they would have described one of the girls at the party. You know, Amy, we have a great guest coming up. We have Reggie Hudlin, who wrote and directed this film, which is his first feature film. We also have Christopher Kid Reed today in the show. They'll be coming up in just a little bit. But I wanted to bring you back to, I know that you love this movie. I want to hear why you love this movie, but I didn't know if you know that my history to this movie goes back a little bit. Here is my signed VHS copy
of House Party 3.
I worked at Blockbuster Video, and the Blockbuster I worked at, Play, used to come in and rent videos, him and Natalie Portman. And I one time got him to sign this. Now, the one thing I find very interesting about this, I need to ask Kid about this, is he signed it Peace, Kid, and Play. He signed for both of them. So I'm going to have to ask Kid if he is okay with that. And have they, you know, because he's really, I mean, that's, they both, he, there it is. I've also met Chris Kid a few times as well. And I got his autograph at a Caliente cab company in New York City when I was a freshman at NYU. So there we go. Nicest guy.
I had no idea you were such an autograph nut.
I was for a little bit. It was a weird time.
Were you cool about it? Did you have any like smoothness, or just like, excuse me, Mr. Play, may I get your autograph, please?
I was very respectful. One time I was shut down by Alan Alda from MASH. I went over to his table and said, get out of here, kid. You don't know who I am.
You didn't say that during our MASH episode. Why did you hide that fact?
I don't believe. Oh, wow. I can't. I normally take that one out all the time. I love Alan Alda. And he was right. Honestly, I was a 6-year-old kid. I didn't know who Alan Alda was. My grandma made me go up and talk to him.
Oh, wait. No, you did tell us this story. I'm sorry. I forgot. Anything that's about your traumatic family, I do always remember.
Amy, what is your connection with House Party?
You know, I didn't see House Party until I was in college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I popped it in, and I swear I must have driven all of my friends crazy, because once I watched House Party, I'm here, a senior in film school, never stopped watching it. I watched House Party more than any other film for the entire... I probably watched it more in college just that last year than every other thing I watched throughout college. I just thought it was the perfect platonic ideal of a movie. And it made me excited to be a film critic, because I feel like part of being a film critic is, you know, not saying that like, oh, there's art movies and teen movies. You know, art movies are great and teen movies are nonsense. When a film is perfect, and I believe that House Party is very close to perfect, the film critic's job is to like celebrate that and point it out and say like, this film is great. And then, you know, I am not quite as versed in the rest of the franchise. One of the very rare times in my life that I ever took a pot brownie and watched a movie, it was to watch House Party 2, the Pajama Jammy Jam. And I was so excited to watch it. Like, I was just like, the House Party is my favorite film. I've been putting off watching this until this moment. And that movie is so sad and depressing because Kid, who I love so deeply, loses everything. You know, he loses his dad, he loses his scholarship, he loses his girlfriend. And all of House Party 2, the Pajama Jammy Jam, is just one tragedy after another. And I couldn't take it in the state that I was in. Like, I was bereft. So I've never watched it again.
Oh, man, I hope they brought it back for House Party 3. we're going to talk about where this franchise goes towards the end of the show. But before we bring out Reggie, who I've worked with a couple of times and who is just a great guy and has had his hands on so many amazing things in culture, from House Party and Boomerang and Black Panther and BET and even up until Black Monday, he's done so much cool stuff. Let's go back to when this movie came out, which was 1990, 30 years ago last month. 30 years ago last month, this celebrated its anniversary. And I'm going to give you some year facts from 1990. Okay, so wave your hands in the air, everybody. It's 1990. NASA launches the Hubble Space Telescope. Saddam Hussein orders the Iraq invasion of neighboring Kuwait. US and UK sends troops to Kuwait for Operation Desert Shield. Paleontologist Sue Hendrickson discovers the largest and most well-preserved Tyrannosaurus Rex fossilized skeleton, nicknamed Sue the T-Rex. The specimen is more than 90% complete, 13 feet tall, 40 feet long, and sold for $8 million to Chicago's Field Museum. The U.S. enters a major recession, and the removal of the Berlin Wall begins. Wow, 1990. The hot movies of the year were Ghost, Pretty Woman, Home Alone, and today's film, House Party. So that gives you a little idea of what's going on. By the way, that that Sue T-Rex, you can't get anywhere in Chicago without seeing that around. That's even in the airport. They got a lot of...
Really? So that's where Sue still is?
Not in the airport, but they got like a lot of memorabilia to see Sue. So this is a big year. A big, big year.
Have you seen Sue? I've never seen Sue. I've never been to Chicago.
Oh, Chicago's a great city. You got to see Sue. I've seen Sue and I've seen House Party. but let's play a clip from the movie. Just a little taste of what this movie is about.
I pulled a clip of a rap battle between Kid and Play at the center of the movie.
Yeah, I know.
Give me that mic.
Oh, you want some of this?
Yo, it's my turn. I'm never fessing, possessing the tools that it takes to rock. I think it's time for the new kid on the block. With a style that's wild yet so unique. I can't be stopped from reaching my peak because giving my all at all, that's how I gotta live. It's my prerogative. So you know I gotta give more for the dance floor. And I'll make your brain sore. Kids revving and buzzing just like a chainsaw. Well, look, you'll say, damn, man. That kid, he's a grand man. Because I bust a hand. Stand on American Bandstand. With these, I plead with ease and make your mind freeze. Straight out the 80s, right into the 90s. Giving you the highs and lows like a drama. And if the mic's got juice, you know I'ma keep wailing. You know I'll have you staring a while. Because the kid's much more than hair and a smile. That is the hype shit.
Oh, I see. You think you all that now.
Yup. And then some.
It's my party and I'll rhyme if I want to. Be careful and don't you step to the front to diss. Cause I'ma dismiss with a death kiss and make you sorry that you ever stepped to this microphone wizard. So come on, place your bet. Is it gonna be me or Eraserhead? Put your money on a sorry old poor thing. Well, you can get behind a sure thing. And that's me, the capital P on the high tip. One false move and you'll get your ass whipped. Just tell me how the rhymes and the cuts sound. You won't start feeling the pain till you touch ground. Boy, you're going way out. I'm ready to serve you. If you can stay out past your pop's curfew, look at him, already a has-been. Let Uncle Play say a rhyme that'll tuck your ass in.
I love this. And this opens up a big question for me about this movie. Because Kid and Play, as we know them, are a rap duo, right? They are, you know, they're together, they're friends. But in this movie, they're not like best friends. They're kind of like, it's an interesting relationship. In the grand scheme of like movies with best friends, this movie kind of breaks a lot of the rules. And what would you say that they're like good buddies?
Yeah, I would say like this movie has a look at friendship, but there's a lot of competition between friends. And it's like kind of figuring out how much can we tussle over the same things. You're like,
right.
The play that they present forward in this movie, you know, Kid is kind of the sweetheart. There's that line to like having to stay up past his dad's curfew. Like he's the kind of sheltered one. His mother's dead. He's sweeter. He's more innocent. Whereas Play is like in this movie, kind of a jerk. Like they kind of let him have a character who's like, I am really fastidious. Like this is my party. I am the coolest. I'm the only one who gets to rep. I'm really bad about taking care of Martin Lawrence's feelings when I make him DJ for free at my party, which is a very relatable
emotion. And wreck his equipment, Amy. They wreck his
equipment. Come
on.
And then you also have, you know, the other pair of female best friends in here who are both quietly crushing on Kid a little bit or like messing with his feelings and them having to figure out their whole dynamic. There's a whole world in this film. You know, we talk about John Hughes's movies as sometimes at their best when they try, like in Pretty in Pink, getting into the economics of the world. But here in House Party, you see that all four of them have different lives, different kind of family structures. You know, that Tisha's family, her parents are kind of wealthy. They go to like benefits. Whereas like her best friend, Sheree, her, like her house, she lives in the projects. And they talk about all the differences and how that affects their life. And like, who do you want to date because of it? It's a really complicated world with these friends. It's not all just like we're homogenous and we get along.
I totally agree. And so, like, I mean, if you've not seen the movie, which you should see, but like, let's explain the movie, because I think if you don't know anything about it, you would just assume it's about one monster house party. But the house party relatively plays a small part in the film. It kind of reminds me in ways of like Superbad. Like the party is there, but it's not like even Superbad. The party is like the climax. The house party is not the climax of this movie. It's kind of the midpoint.
It's the center point. Yeah, it's the center point. You know, Leslie Tackett says in the comments, she feels like Kid and Play are just, quote, associates who are both interested in rap, which I think is interesting. And Brianna Bertolio points out something that I think is really interesting about this house party. Like, you would think a house party movie, like you're saying, is decadence and stuff goes crazy and, like, there's goats running through. But this movie, you know, one thing about it is, like, there's a lot of vacuuming. There's a lot of take care of my parents' house. There's a lot of
There's safe sex, Amy. There's conversations about that. Yeah.
And there's a subplot in here about how drinking is kind of lame in high school. Like two kids drink, they both pass out, and they're not fun. And everybody makes fun of them.
I know. It's. I think that this movie is more realistic than you would believe it to be. Because I think every time you see a party in a movie, whether it's like Animal House or, you know, Almost Famous or Superbad, there are these larger than life things going on. And this is just a normal night. It's like a Wednesday night house party and a lot of things go on, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. And you're right about the John Hughes comparison. I was thinking about that a lot. I was like, this movie, very rarely do we talk about teen movies decades after they're released. And this is a movie that have a lot of similarities because I think they are grounded in this universal truth about being a teenager.
Exactly. I think there's something really universal about House Party. You know, it's not set in any particular town. It's kind of an everywhere-ish Americana town. I would say it doesn't get too deep into individual character personality traits. Like, it's not about, like, where is somebody going to go to college? Like, there's no greater life beyond this, you know, that they're worried about. It's kept to this, but yet it's still really realistic. It's very easy to work your way into relating to this film.
Well, it's funny because this movie is such a gigantic hit. And we'll talk about how that gets to that point, but that you forget that it's an independent movie. This is a movie that was based off a short film and it has some of the hallmarks of what we know as an independent film, but it's about teens and it's comedy and it's fun and it's light, but it's like, they can't necessarily do all of that either just because it's just not going to, they can't afford to do all of that. You know, it's a very simple kind of film.
Yeah, exactly. And I love that this film, you know, it premieres at Sundance in 1990, January 1990, like the dawn of a new decade. And it wins one of the major prizes, one of the major like American dramatic prizes. And it's so fascinating because, you know, the year before is like the famous year where Sex, Lies, and Videotape goes to Sundance, puts Sundance on the map and kind of launches the indie world. But this film coming right after it, it makes me feel like hungry for almost this indie, really likable, big comedy world that House Party seemed like it was inaugurating, but it didn't really get followed up on, you know? That there's, I think there's films we're missing that should have existed, that this would have paved the way for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like it's so, I think a lot of the times what you do is you kind of gravitate towards making a movie of the now, especially with films that are involving teens, right? It's like everything is totally topical and current, and the issues that you deal with aren't necessarily, I don't know. There's something about these issues that seem like universal, and they, 30 years later, they are the same issues that kids would be dealing with. Yes, things have changed. That's why there's 5 sequels to this movie. I think we'll get the verdict on whether or not any of them hold up as good as this. But I want to talk, before we bring in Reggie, I want to talk about who Kid and Play were when this started. I think a big piece of news that came out a while ago was that at one point, Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff were attached to be in it. And they were like, no, we're going to do something else. And so it came to Kid and Play. And so Kid and Play are these, like, they've had these 2 big albums here. So take a look at this. I just want to show you, like, these 2 big albums that they had out there. One was Too Hype. And that's their first album. And their videos are playing on this, like, kind of cooler version of MTV called Too Much Music. And then their second album, which comes out the year that House Party comes out, is Funhouse. And I want to give you a little taste of what they are like as a duo. So this is a clip from one of their videos. This is before House Party came out.
Correct. We select on the set beats and rhymes that are both in check. Her beats behind the board, cold, getting respect. We are Kid and Play in total effect. We're getting funky up to par, and that's with a hyped up beat. Just laying on the guitar, you'll feel the bass. It's soft and wet, yes, honey, you'll get a taste. But not just yet, right, money? The beat is live, troops, so don't front on it. Get it while the getting's good and just jump on it. Minute by minute, yo, hour by hour, Kid and Play got soul power. We're getting funky.
I just want to bring this up because this is a movie, these guys meant a bunch to me because this is a time when I'm getting into rap music. My parents don't know what is acceptable rap music, right? Because it's sort of like they are, you can listen to this around your parents. There's no cursing in it. You know, it's not like NWA. It wasn't like some of the other stuff that was out there. And I felt like this and Will Smith and DJ Jazzy Jeff were like, they were the things I could listen to in the house and that would not, that were like, it was acceptable. So that was like, it, I think for so many people that are my age, that's kind of an entry point into these guys as well. So they're big, they're super big, but they're, you know, they're right now, they're just kind of rap stars, they're hip, you know, hip hop stars. Like they're not like, they're not necessarily actors.
No, you're right. They're, yeah, they were really accomplished, which is why I think it's really applause worthy that they're able to channel high school emotions so well in this film. I mean, they feel legitimately like people who are still discovering the world. There's not a lot of cynicism in the way they play this. I feel like a lot of times when an older person plays a teen, you can kind of say that they're playing a teen.
Wait, how old are they?
Okay.
I don't know
this. All right. Yeah, let's look at this. I'm pulling up a picture, and okay. I want you just to guess how old you think they are. Feel free to play at home alone. Like, guess how old you think they were when they were playing teenagers in House Party.
I mean, I'm going to say, like, I feel like they're like 19 and 20, or maybe like 19 and 18? No, they have to be like 19 and 20. I think that's it. Not 20.
Give us the ages.
Oh boy, wait. What?
26.
I did not realize they're almost 30. Holy shit.
They're such good actors in this movie. Seriously.
Yeah. Whoa, that's crazy. Oh my God, 26 and 28.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lars Anderson was asking me, was it me, the person who was forced to destroy my Weird Al Yankovic records because my mom thought it was offensive? Yes, that is true. My mom became a born-again Christian, and there was a song on a Weird Al album called Nature Trail to Hell, And she thought that was a demonic song, so we had to destroy those albums. My Kid and Play albums were not touched. My LL Cool J albums were touched, and they were destroyed. Wait,
can I tell you something?
Yeah.
My dad, when I insisted that I really wanted to get the cassette tape of User Illusion 1 and 2 by Guns N' Roses,
yes,
my dad went through the lyric sheets and crossed out in Sharpie every lyric he thought was offensive.
My wife had an anatomy book, and her dad drew underwear on all the people. So there we go. You hear the laugh of our first guest on the show. He is the writer, the director of House Party. He's also the director of great films like Boomerang. He has his own entertainment conglomerate. He ran BET. Reggie, you have lived a life. You've kind of reinvented Black Panther from Marvel Comics. You've done it all. Please welcome Reggie Hudlund.
Hello.
Hello.
Reggie. We are so excited to talk to you, Reggie. This is awesome. Thank you for celebrating a House Party with us.
Look, Paul, first of all, anytime we can talk, we love the same things, comic books, hip hop. We're always like comedy, like, yes, these are the things we care about.
I got to tell you, I was a fan of this movie and a fan of yours, but I did some like research deep dive on this, and I didn't understand kind of all the backstory to this, right? So you're at Harvard, you make a thesis film, which is this House Party, you make a short that is this film. I didn't realize that came out of that. So I want to just talk about that short for a second. Like, what was the, where did that all come from?
You know, my freshman year is 1979, right? Mm-hmm. Which is the same year that Rapper's Delight hits.
Oh, right? Man, right.
So freshman year, it's all about, can you memorize the entire song? Every verse, every lyric, right? This is what's happening all over the country, including on Harvard's campus, right? So by the time I'm doing my senior thesis, and Harvard's film program is very documentary film oriented, right? Which is cool in the sense that you're not focused on making movies about movies, which is what a lot of young people do. You get more focused on the real world.
Yeah.
And in the real world, the most exciting thing that was happening was this cultural revolution that was happening via hip hop. And because I wasn't from New York, because I was from the Midwest, for me, St. Louis, I was interested not so much in the New York experience of it, but the point of view of kids all over the country, you know, as the revolution came to their town, to their radio station, you know, through their parties, at school or at someone's house. You know, that was the part that was interesting to me. Also, I had, you know, growing up on Animal House, growing up on Risky Business. And I'm like, well, why can't we have the black version of those movies? You know, not remaking them, but like, when I was a kid, my eldest brother was in film school and I was always pitching him movie ideas. So funny, one Christmas, he gave me a present. I opened it and it's a book with blank pages. And he said, stop telling me your ideas, write them down.
Oh, wow. I love that. Now, that's a great gift.
Right. And like, that's the, when you go from talking about what you want to do to actually doing the act of writing them down, that's the transformative moment, right? So I had collected all these stories from my high school years on that were just incidents, right? Just things that my friends did or my brother did or whatever. So when it came time for my senior thesis, I said, well, I'm going to take these stories I've been collecting, string them together like pearls, and layer them with this new music, right? So I made this 20-minute short film called House Party. And it won awards and, you know, created a kind of a buzz, right?
Yeah.
And I remember it would show, this was before Spike Lee made She's Gotta Have It. So, like, he had this movie called Joe's Best Side Barbershop, We Cut Heads. And that was an hour. And my movie was 20 minutes. So they would show them together. And that's a night at the movies. Right?
That's amazing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, wow.
So so after Spike makes She's Gotta Have It, there was all this kind of appetite, like, well, is there another one? What's going on? Yeah. And I remember there was a party at Nelson George's house. And Nelson was the journalist who was kind of plugged into everybody. So Spike was at the party. Russell Simmons was at the party. And I knew Russell was going to make another hip-hop movie. He had already done Crush Groove, but he was going to make another movie, Tougher Than Leather. So I went to Russell and I was like, Russell, I got to direct your movie. Now, you don't know me, but I'm here, you know. And he was like, my partner's going to direct the movie. And, you know, I found out that he was like, oh, some Harvard guy thinks he knows hip-hop. Get the hell out of here. That was sort of the big, you know, Spike's success opened the door for other Black filmmakers. So, you know, I did a couple of deals and, you know, for movies that didn't happen. Meanwhile, but I had earned enough money to buy a computer. And back then, like, you could buy a car or a computer. They were cost about the same. But I figured the computer was the better investment, you know, like,
yeah.
The computer will not depreciate. The computer, I can write another script. So on that computer, I wrote the spec script for House Party.
Oh, wow.
And there was a young executive who worked for New Line Cinema who saw the House Party short and said, hey, we should meet. And I had a spec script. So I was like, boom,
yeah.
Here's what I want to make. And they said, okay, let's make it. So, you know, short film plus spec script, job.
Was it risky though at that time? Because it's sort of like, you know, it's sort of, it seems to me like this movie feels very like independent. Like, you know, it's like a little, like, you know, was it, did you have to jump through hoops? Did they want you to change anything or were they like letting you make your vision?
Right. Well, that was interesting because I first got a set of notes that were just all wrong. Right.
Right.
And I was like, no, you don't get the spirit of this at all. Right.
Yeah.
But I get that my script could be better.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, this is the key part, you know, like their solution may be wrong, but that doesn't mean that they're not pointing at something that's flawed. Right.
Right. What's the note under the note? Right.
Right. Right. So I went to work and I rewrote the script and made it better. Because again, I didn't know anything. Because again, my film program is very documentary oriented. So I'm learning, okay, screenplays are in three acts. Okay, what's a three act? You know, I don't know anything, right? I'm just figuring it out as I go. So I rewrite the script. It's much better. They like it and they greenlight it. And it's like, oh my God, I'm making a movie. So,
yeah.
And they're like, well, we need stars, right? I had seen before BET, before MTV was playing Black music videos, there was a local show in New York called Video Music Box.
Okay.
And you would watch that and you would see cool stuff. So I saw the kid play music video like the one you just played, yeah. Which was awesome. And I was like, who are those guys? They're very visual. They're very cool. So I talked to a friend of mine who worked at the management company that handled Kid and Play. I was like, are they good guys? Do they show up to work on time? What's their vibe? And they were like, yeah, they're great. I was like, great. So we came in, we pitched them the movie, and they're like, I don't know, man. I'm supposed to go on tour this summer. I'm going to make so much more money on tour than making your little no-budget movie. I'm like, I'm telling you, this is going to change your life. You know, in this office, which is about like a closet, you know. You know, I'm telling you, anyway, I convinced them to do it, and I was like, I went to do it. They got gold and platinum albums. I didn't know if they had gold or platinum albums, but
right, yeah, they, yeah, you yeah,
they're big.
Like the Kid and Play personalities that are in the film, did you tailor it to who they were as people, or were like how well defined were their personalities in the public eye before this film?
Yeah, well, they were. I mean, they were cool, fun guys. Obviously, Play was the smoother, cooler right. guy. Play had the high top face, so he seemed a little more wacky. So I just kind of gave Kid my personality, which is like a shy guy with a cartoon sensibility. And yeah. I always had a much cooler friend. Right. So yeah. I just made Play the much cooler friend. And, you know, it just kind of went from there, you know.
What I love about this movie is it doesn't feel stereotypical, because even in the beginning, like, he's not like a wimp, like he fights back. Like Kid is in that, you know, in that little fight in the beginning, he throws the jello, like he's not. You know, I think in most movies, like, oh, don't hit me. Or, you know, it's like, yeah, he's afraid of them, but he's not backing down. There's something cool about him, which I think is different. You know,
yeah, the thing is, if you were scared of fighting, then you were a punk. And there's literally, the audience is like, we're done with you. There's no redemption. We're not waiting 90 minutes for your nuts to drop. Like, you're out. Right? So if you fight and lose, that's respectable.
Right. I like that.
We wanted, he had to be respectable.
Can we actually show like that screenshot from the movie of the Jell-O fight? I think I pulled one up for the producer because I wanted to ask you about it. You know, the Jell-O hits a picture of Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
And I was wondering, I mean, is that like a political message in there?
No, it's I look back and I go, man, could I be more on the nose, more... hammer the point home. Like, there's no school that actually has pictures of the president hanging on the wall. I mean, that's such a trope of teen movies or comedy movies. Yeah. But at the time, I thought it was funny.
I don't even think he was president the time.
It works. I mean, it does work. I also want to get in your head a little bit, because I've read a bunch of articles about this, but I haven't really heard anyone's take on how the movie opens and the post-credit scene in the film. Like, the movie opens with this dream, right? And the roof is coming off the house. Like, and then at the end of the movie, if you don't watch the credits, you won't see it, like, because there's a little blanket of credits, and then that roof comes falling out of the sky and kills, or at least maims, those two police officers at the end. So talk to me about like that. Like, I love that framing device. It's so good. I was like, whoa, this is really kind of crazy and fun.
Right. Well, I mean... we were like, okay, we needed like a credit sequence, right? So I was just like, okay, well, what will make you, I mean, my attitude then and now is kind of, even though it's a theatrical motion picture, like, I feel like you have five minutes tops to get to someone to drop the remote control, right?
Right.
It's like, you'd sit there, you pay your money, you're watching the movie. And do you settle in, or do you go, well, maybe we can catch the movie next door and then go to the other part of the multiplex, right? Like, so you got to like nail people. So I figured if we literally blew the roof off,
right?
In the George Clinton sense of like tear the roof off the sucker, if we actually opened like that, right? In a dream sequence, people would go, well, I don't know what the hell this is. I've never seen this movie before. I'm going to watch it, right?
So yeah.
That was the spirit. And then, you know, in my kind of cartoon mind, I was like, well, what happened to the roof, right? So, you know, so I said, okay, let's have a end credit sequence. Obviously, Marvel bit me.
Right there.
An end credit sequence where the roof lands on the cops. And I remember, I just thought it was so funny. So then the day we're shooting it, and there's a giant crane holding this roof and swinging it over, and there's dummies dressed as the cops. There's a, okay, shoot the real people, then switch them out with the dummies. Yeah. And my DP is like, you know, it's easy to type this. You know, and the roof but there's a huge giant crane swing in this hand. I'm like, yeah.
And that's an expensive, right? For a movie
it's
like this.
Super ambitious for like 20 seconds. It's 20 seconds joke, right? But I didn't know this at the time, but there's a great Mel Brooks quote, right?
Right.
Where he was pitching something in Spaceballs, and the studio exec says, "Well, you know, that's a pretty expensive joke." And Mel Brooks says, "No joke is too expensive."
Boy, I love it. He's right.
If you get a laugh,
it works.
The joke pays for itself. We're done.
100%. That's what people talk about. They put it in the trailer and you're done. You got it. You got the whole thing.
That's it.
I actually have a question about George Clinton, because you also cast him in this movie. You know,
yes.
He's the DJ at the fraternity party, at like the kind of sophisticated fundraiser thing.
Yes.
I've always wondered this, and now I finally get to ask you, is that, in your imagination of him being there at that DJ table, is that George Clinton who's bored and fallen on hard times, or is it just a DJ who looks like George Clinton?
It's an alternate universe George Clinton where it didn't happen for him. Right? He's as funky and cool as the actual George Clinton, but he's reduced to playing this party, which is just not happening.
But I love that.
The main thing for me, I just had to meet George Clinton. I'm making a movie. I may never make another movie. So if I'm making a movie, I'm going to use the little bit of leverage I have to meet my ultimate creative hero.
Well, right? I see right there. Yeah.
He's there.
Did it work? Was it good? Was it worth it? Like, I mean, because I always feel like when you meet somebody that you're a big fan of, what did he pay off? Was it fun to meet him?
It was spectacular because he's a really great guy.
Right.
And he was staying at the Mondrian Hotel, right? So like I go to meet him and I go up the elevator and knock on the door and he comes, this pack full of funketeers, right? And we're talking and I'm like, okay. I've got to like let him know who I am,
yeah.
Right? That I'm here with him. So I mentioned his book, Behold a Pale Horse. He goes, you read Behold a Pale Horse? I said, yes, I have. He goes, oh. And it was like, I was instantly like, I'm in right. at least the middle circle, right? And we
that.
Have remained friends throughout.
I love so that.
So it was absolutely worth it.
We have a couple more questions before we let you go. I want to just, the other thing I didn't know was that this movie premieres at Sundance. We talked about that, the midnight movie, the year after Sex, Lies, and Videotape. What was it like in that theater? Did you know in that moment, like, oh, this works? Because that's a tough room to also play, too. It's like, yeah, like, what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting because when we had our first test screen for the movie, mm-hmm. it was on the Fox lot, right?
Okay.
So we're driving to the Fox lot and traffic's bad and I'm nervous. I'm going to be late for my test screen. And I realize the traffic's bad because people are coming to the test screening.
Wow.
And they literally like, it was supposed to be an audience that was half black and half white, but
right.
all the black came early and took all the seats. So, and like the theater literally rocked. It was explosive.
Whoa.
So I knew the movie worked. But this is the opposite. I'm in a essentially all white room in Utah, right?
Yeah.
And so this is a different kind of test for the movie. And it annihilated, right? And
wow.
and like Sundance is a great place, but it's not, it's like a bunch of very thoughtful films, you know? So
right.
like a big fun movie at Sundance is really unexpected there. So the audience went crazy, standing ovation. And I remember two people ran up, right? One was one of the top execs from Warner Brothers who said, I remember that script. I passed on it, but I didn't see this movie in it. I'll buy the rights to this movie right now from New Line. I was like, wow. And the other was Michael Moore, the filmmaker who did Roger. And
yeah,
Lee,
yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, Roger. He was like, this movie's great. So it was just like, whoa. Like this immediate gratification, not just from the audience, but from specific people who represented very different constituencies that I really cared about. So, and they just started adding more and more shows throughout the rest of the festival. They're like, no, we have to add more house party screenings. So we won the audience trophy, the best cinematography trophy. It was a really rewarding event. It was just like, wow. And like, so it was just wonderful. It was a wonderful, wonderful launch for the film.
I'm trying to imagine what that was like to be there in 1990. You know, it's like the start of a new decade. You know, there's all this buzz around this film, and you're thinking, I'm curious, like, where did you think the film industry was going to go? Like, what were the hopes right then for, like, what was going to happen? And, like, what really, how did everything play out?
Well, you know, it's really interesting because, I mean, my older brother was a black filmmaker. But, you know, it was like when you, like, you have a little independent movie, it showed a film festival. So, you know, in those days, the ambition was if you could somehow get the money to make a feature film, it could show for 2 weeks at the cinema studio, right? On the right. Upper East Side of New York. And like, whoa, you're a rock star. I mean, that was as big as you could dream, right? So when House Party opened, you know, nationwide, reviewed by Siskel and Ebert and, you know, Vincent Canby. And, you know, it was like, oh my God, like we are, you know, crossing into this new place, right? With this new movie. And I remember like Siskel was like, this is a movie about juvenile delinquents who do property damage. I'm like, whoa. And Roger Ebert completely got his, no, this is a teen movie, like any other teen movie. So, and there was a theater in Colorado that wouldn't turn the lights all the way down in the theater because they thought kids were just going to riot. So, you know, and you, I heard you a little earlier when you were talking about this specific period in hip hop, which is a forgotten period. There's a great phrase that Bernie Mac used to say called happy rap.
Right. And,
and there was a lot of artists who just made happy party records. Right.
Yeah.
And it was before NWA. It was before Public Enemy. And, you know, that sound and that image is great too, but the happy rap era, Heavy D and the Boys, all those kind of artists, they're really underrated, they're unfairly forgotten, and they kind of need to come back. I mean, the most successful version was Will Smith. He is the pinnacle of happy rap. There's nothing wrong with that.
But I think it got a lot of kids like me into it because it was sort of like it was accessible. It felt young. It felt different. And I mean, that was it. I was even thinking about, Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock. Like,
yes.
You know, it's like all this great stuff.
It's a great party record.
Yeah. They were
And you're right. You could play it in front of your parents. And, you know, to me, one of the greatest hip hop records ever made was Mind Playing Tricks on Me by the Ghetto Boys, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. And there's two versions. And the truth is the clean version is better than the dirty version because they actually wrote new lyrics and the lyrics are better than the curse words.
Oh, I got to check that out. I want to see that.
Check it out.
Reggie, it's been so great talking to you. We compared you to John Hughes in a way because he created like this definitive teen movie that feels so specific and so strong. And I just want to tell you a couple of things that people are saying about you on the chat right now. People are like, there's like The Great White Hype is one of my favorite movies. People think you're a brilliant writer. People think that you should have your own podcast. people just love everything that you do. I want to recommend that you kind of got back to your documentary roots recently with Netflix with The Black Godfather, which is a great doc. And you've done so much great stuff. You've produced things like The Boondocks. You've directed things like Boomerang. Your career is so fascinating to me. And thank you so much for spending this time and chatting with us.
Absolutely.
I
want to say too, like a lot of people in the chat and myself included are saying, we really want to see the original short of House Party. I was unable to find it. I don't know if it's possible to ever show it, but if it is, there are people who really want to check it out.
Yeah, it's literally in a vault somewhere. Like, and you know, when you make your first movie, you just go, every night I'm just going to watch my short film before I go to bed. And the reality is you just go, that's ancient history. I can't even pay attention to the movie I did last year. Thank you, Paul. Great to meet you, Amy. Thanks for having me. Thanks for celebrating the House Party. I am the opening act. The main act is here. Do your damn thing, Brother Chris Reed.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. That's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Oh man! Well, that's the better. We could give a better intro there. Welcome, Chris. Thanks, Reggie. Bye bye.
Take care.
Hey. All right. Look at this. What's up? How are you?
What's up? How you doing? Well, can you hear me? Okay.
We can hear you great. Thank you so much for joining us and chatting with us. We've just been talking to Reggie
about all this. I've been watching. It's fascinating to me, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, you know, just we're kind of going through your guys' career and, you know, where you guys, you know, when you and Play started, you know, making these two albums, you know, what was that like? Like coming, you know, obviously you partner up, but then when you make that first album, Too Hype, where, how does that explode for you? Is that big right out of the gate or is it sort of a slow burn and you guys start to get build up?
You know, it was a different kind of vibe. Like back then it was like different. Like we didn't have like an album deal
right
away. You know, we actually had to have like 3 hit singles before they gave us an album deal. Like,
oh wow.
We had our first single was called Last Night. Our second single was called Do This My Way. And our third hit single was called Getting Funky. Yeah. And then the record label said, I think we'll give you a record deal or a whole album. You know what I'm saying? Paul, you know how it is. Paul,
no, that's,
like, it's like if you gotta like how many times it, you know.
So, yeah, you gotta keep on proving yourself over and over again.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's just what it was. So you know how it is. When you don't know any better, you just like, all right. We got to make another one. Let's make another one. We got to make another one. Make another one. And so we had 3 hit joints in a row. Our producer, by the way, our producer was Herbie Lovebug, who, you know, had blown up Salt and Pepper, you know, no small feat, whatever. You know, we got the hottest producer. And so they give us a record deal. And our first album, you know, was a gold album. It was a big deal. And I think that's what those songs and those videos is what came to Reggie's attention.
Yeah.
You know, I was loving to hear Reggie's, you know, his take on everything, you know. By the way, he's looking real Danny Gloverish right now.
He looks good. He's got that quarantine beard. He looks really good. I like it.
Yeah, I'm going to give him my colorist number. Okay. But that was the vibe we were, and I think that was the vibe that Reggie was picking up on. You know, he was in New York. We were in New York. We were hot. We were hot in New York, and hip hop music was hot. It was coming up, and Reggie, you know, Reggie was really, really, really smart. He was always thinking about the next level type stuff. And originally, he would approach me in the clubs in New York because I was always there. Play was never there. I was always right. There.
Right. Wait, right? So you guys were kind of a different, like, so you were more of the partier. Yeah. And he was more in.
But we didn't start that way. We didn't start that way as kids. We know, we've known each other since we were like 12 and 13. And when I was, when we first started hanging out, I was the geek, you know, I was the kid that knew. You know, I was a guy that went to, you know, I went to Bronx High School of Science. Yo, I was like, I was a smarty. And, you know, and Play was, you know, he was like a stick up kid. He was like, you know, he was, you know what I mean? It was a match made in heaven. You know what I'm saying? we would watch Jeopardy and he would be amazed that I knew the answers. And then we would go out somewhere and I'd be amazed that he knew all the felons. So it was a thing. We were trying to bring it together. You know what I'm saying? So it was a natural friendship. And I think Reggie picked up on that from the videos. And then, you know, as he recounted, I don't want to recount what he recounted, but, you know, that process, you know, we got to know each other. And I remember reading the original House Party script. And I remember thinking, like he said, it wasn't all there.
Right.
But it was pretty, it was the closest I'd ever read. I've read a lot of scripts that people had proposed for Play and I to do. It was my job to read back then.
Right. Yeah.
For the group, you know.
Was that your end game? Like you wanted to do, like you wanted to get into acting? Like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I know. No, not that. But I think we all had dreams about, like, you know, being famous and doing cool stuff, right, and all this and that. And I think at the time, I think what Reggie was referring to at the time, you know, we were doing okay. Like we were touring a lot, and that was Play's vibe. Play's vibe was like, I mean, we fought, and you know, we not fought about it, but that was the internal discussion. I was like, yo, I read this script. I think we can get it there. You know, in my opinion, I was like, yo, man, this joint's like about 70% there. I said, but we can bring it the rest of the way. This is the best thing I ever read that somebody wrote that approached us about it.
Right.
And so, you know, we went back and forth, me, him, and Herbie Lovebug. And, you know, Play was more like, yo, we got this tour. But, you know, I think I was thinking like Reggie. I was thinking, man, you know, yay, you never know.
Right.
We could, you know, and, you know, and that's what happened. But, you know, it was, I don't know, when, and I'm sure Reggie can attest to this as well. Like, when you look at all the different things that had to kind of come together, it's pretty amazing. And then, you know, when they did, and now it's 30 years later, and people feel as, you know, I don't know, emotional and as positive about the movie as they did then.
Yeah,
that's the crazy part. Like you can't predict that.
Well, but it's like it's part you too. Like, you know, it's like it's this alchemy of everything. That's like why people respond to that movie and the movies after. It's like because it's your relationship. It's the relationships in the movie. It feels like you are hanging out with friends, and these characters feel real. Like they feel lived in. You know, they don't feel like stereotypical characters.
Wait. Let me tell you a quick story because, but I know I want to get to a question from Amy because I've been watching her. She asked the best question.
She's
the best.
Don't ever, Paul, don't lose her.
She's the best. I know.
You're gonna go downhill if you lose her.
I know. Believe me, I know.
But I'll tell you a quick story that let me know early on, like this is something different. So we did the movie. The movie's getting ready to come out. So they're doing, you know, various screenings or whatever. So they tell us, they say, yo, Kid and Play, come to this theater in Newark, New Jersey. Newark, New Jersey, Brick City. We're gonna do a screening for these high school kids from Newark. Okay, no problem. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, it's like the Christians and the Lions. Like, this is how you're gonna know if where you stand, right? So we go to the screening and they put us up in the balcony where they can't see us. So the crowd don't know we're there. The kids, they don't know we're there. We're up there, just me and them. Me and Play, and we're watching this. We're watching them watch the movie. And there was one point in the movie, and I'm sure Amy knows this because she knows everything about every movie, all right? There was a part in the movie where, you know, I'm running around. The cops are chasing me. The full force is chasing me. I'm running around, and finally I see Play and Martin in the car. They going to the party, and I'm like, I'm trying to wave them down. I'm like, yo, come, you know, come scoop me, come. And they just drive right by me, right? And the dude says, see, old man, wasn't that kid? And he said, man, you know, Play was like, hey, man, whatever. And we in this theater, and some young brother from down below, one of the young high school kids, he just stood up and said, Play, you ain't shit. This is the first time. This is the first time anybody seen this movie anywhere, and you know what I'm saying. And it was that blatant. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then we looked at each other. We were like, "Yo, like this is some real." You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They saw me. They saw me. I'm running for my life. I'm trying to get through. I'm gonna see my mansky. And the dude jumped up. He said, Play, you ain't shit. And the whole crowd was like, ah! I looked at him like, yeah, motherfucker, you ain't shit.
This isn't a
question exactly, but I was hoping we could watch my favorite 40 seconds of the movie as a group, which is when you finally make it to the party and you walk in and you have this entrance through the whole house all the way around. It is my favorite part because I think it's just the happiest, biggest joy bomb on earth. Oh, wow. And I just want to watch it together. And I just want to ask you about filming that scene because you just radiate so much happy.
Right.
Yo, what's up, man? What's going on? Yo, I'm glad you showed up, man. What's up with your pops?
Yo, you know how it is, man. How much more trouble can I get into? Beat down's a beat down.
Yo, man, I hear you, man. But since you're here, let me announce you. Yo, look who fell into the gig.
No, yeah, bro. Yeah.
All right, man, yo, put my fucking spot, please.
You got it. Don't worry. Right.
A lot of things that was really great about, you know, the house party movies, particularly that one, was it really mirrored things that we had gone through as young people, as people growing up in high school, or, you know, in terms of your family and stuff like that. So, I mean, there was, and particularly with Play and I, like, we had done these things already. You know, we had been to the parties at 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning, got in trouble and got beat down. And all, you know what I mean? That's why when I say a beat down is a beat down, a beat down is a beat down. You know, a beat down is a beat down if you come in at 2 or if you come in at 5. So, right. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's the beat down is a beat down. And I think, having been through what I've been through, I'm ducking full force. I'm ducking the cops. I'm ducking. I get to the party. I'm happy. I'm relieved. I'm like, like, you know what I'm saying? This might be the last fun time of my life. You know what I'm saying? But you know, when you were sneaking out back in the days, you don't know. You know what's going to happen. You know the hammer is going to strike, but you just like, you know what? You know, I had a friend of mine. He was he was married, right? And he would get in trouble a lot of times. His wife would get mad if he was trying to go out at night. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't want him to go out, and he would look and he'd say, "Well, you know what? Ain't no use in both of us being mad, so I'm just gonna go out." All right.
There's so many extras in the party scenes that, you know, you get to see everybody over and over again. You kind of get to create relationships. Like, there's that girl that you hate dancing with for some reason. And I mean, to have this party going on, the number of days it must have taken to get this sequence, like, did it feel sort of like a party, like at craft services, or people just exhausted? Like, you're around the same group of people. Everybody's dancing. Everybody's sweating. Everybody's young. What was that?
I mean, the vibe was excellent. I think we shot a lot of those interiors on Culver City lot, and you know, look, we didn't we I mean Reggie could tell you exactly, but I think we shot that movie in 5 weeks, you know, so we didn't have, it wasn't like,
well, I heard that the dance sequence is only like half a day. It only took, because
I mean, well,
time,
no, I mean, the dance sequence, as I recall, Paul, the dance sequence was like the whole day, like, and they let us know, and they were like, yo, today we're gonna get everything. We're gonna get the kitchen. We're gonna get the whole thing. We're gonna get the battle. You know what I'm saying? They got that whole day. They got the dance battle and they got the rap battle. You know what I mean?
That's a lot.
Yeah. We didn't have that luxury. And as young actors, we didn't know no better. We was like, this is real. No, we just like, all right, you know, we were all young in our 20s. And we just like, all right, you know, I could dance all day back then. You know what I'm saying? We could dance all day. So I just remember a lot of energy. And as you can see, but I'm going to tell you, I'm gonna hip you to something real quick.
All right.
Particularly for Amy's knowledge, because if you want to watch some of the interesting people in the party scene, when we're doing the battle scene, when playing our rap battling, there's a young lady to the right of the DJ. She's got red on and she is dancing up a storm. Like, and we don't, to this day, we don't know if she's dancing to the music or the words or whatever. She's got like curly hair and she is, She got gloves on, and she, you know what I mean?
And I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, and she is dancing with the unbridled passion of youth. You know what I mean? And to me, that's kind of what that movie was about, man. We were just like, you know, we had no idea that this thing would you know, we had hints along the way, but you know, for people to still be, you know, trying to talk about it all after all this time, and it having been kind of a platform and a boost off for a lot of different actors, and you know, it was great for us. It was great for Reggie. It was great for, you know, a lot of the different actors
you guys,
that were involved, you know?
I mean, look, you are. So you create, you have these singles, you get this big album, you have this giant movie, you turn yourselves into cartoons. You become a cartoon show. It's like you have this tremendous, like you get to do everything. And I was reading that, like, there was a little bit of a vibe on the set that it was a cool movie because, like, what, Stallone came by and, like, Denzel Washington came to your rap party. Do you remember that at all? Or?
Well, I remember Denzel. I mean, Denzel was always friendly. Like, you know, he would come by. He's come by like a few of our different productions.
Yeah.
But I just think there was a, I don't know, particularly that first House Party movie. So many of us, it was either our first movie or we were like really, really early in the game. Obviously, Kid and Play was our first movie. Martin had been in a couple of things, but wasn't really, really experienced. Full Force, The Bullies. First movie, and they were amazing. Honestly, the person that had the most experience was probably Tisha Campbell,
right?
And you know, who played, you know, my girlfriend or whatever, and she was amazing. You know, she was great to work with. She, you know, and obviously Reggie was a first time director, so you know, come on, Paul, I'm a big fan of yours. You know when y'all are just doing, y'all just love, yo, we're just gonna do it. And we don't know no better, and that's okay. That was a good thing. So we weren't. There was nothing we were scared of. There was nothing we were scared of. There was nothing we were frightened of.
Across. Yeah, it feels like that's what the it's so playful and fun. Now I have a controversial question to ask you, because here's the thing. I met you when I was in New York City one time. You were having dinner at a restaurant. I got your autograph. You were very lovely about it. I was a young kid. You're super nice. Now Play went to my Blockbuster Video in where I worked, and I got his autograph. Now, Syosset.
He's a house out there.
So he would come in there, him and Natalie Portman, when I was like working there. Now, when you signed your name, it was the best. It was amazing. So now, when you signed your name, Christopher Reed. Now he signed it. I brought this in. I'm gonna show it to you.
Yeah,
House Party. It's a VHS thing. He signed it, Kid and Play.
Yeah, he did. Well, you know, sometimes we would do that. We would do, you know what I mean? We had that relationship with each other that
I didn't want. I mean? Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Right. But on that tip, I'll tell you a funny story real quick. This is back in the days, probably about the same time. So, you know, I was still living in Queens. So I'm in Queens, I'm running around, and there's, you know, this brother tried to stop me. He said, Kid, let me holler at you. Man, I'm like, come on, man. I'm trying to go about my business. You know what I mean? kid, let me holler at you, man. Come on, kid, let me holler at you real quick. And he ran the dude, brother ran me down. He said, man, kid, let me get your autograph, man. Come on, real quick. And I said, all right, man, let me get this autograph. And he pulled out a bootleg copy of House Party. I said, God damn, I said, motherfucker. I said, man, he said, and then he just snatched it. He said, fuck you, kid. I thought Play was better.
I want to, before we let you go, obviously, you sent me this, which I love. This is like a picture that you are in the famous hairstyles of cinema right here. Josh, can you pull up that picture? But look at this. Yeah, here you go. And it's true. Like the most famous, memorable hair. You got it. You did it.
Can you imagine that? The most memorable movie hair. I'm in the top 10 of that. That's pretty cool.
I'd say you're in the top three, honestly. It's like Princess Leia, you. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what else? Maybe it's the top two.
And the thing, if you think, and this is what I tell people, they always ask me about it. Like that. I was like, yo, like I walked in the door like that. I think that's how I got the job. Like, you know what I mean? They made you do your hair like that. I said, no, they didn't make me do my hair like that. We walked in like that. We, as Reggie was stating earlier, like, you know, we had a vibe. You know, we had a vibe. And And Paul, you can appreciate this. You super creative. When you're young, our vibe was, you know, when these young cats come out now, young, you know, entertainers, rappers or whatever, they come out and they say, man, this is the new dance. This is how you dress. This is how you do it. Do it like us. Back when we were coming up, we were like, don't do this.
Right.
You don't do that. We do this.
We're the entertainer. Yeah.
We're the cool kids. We're the cool kids. All that mattered was our crew. You know what I'm saying? Like,
we were like,
whatever you do, don't do this. If you do this, you're corny, you're biting. We told them, don't do this. Don't dance like us. Don't dress like us. Don't do your hair like us. We was like, don't, no. And what'd they do?
They did.
You know what I'm saying? Whatever that came into. We were impressed to have everybody look and dance and be like us. We were like, we're young. We're like, you know, who cares? You know what I'm saying? But it was all love. And, you know, like I said, it was nice to see how y'all rap with Reggie. You know, we changed each other's lives. And, you know, I appreciate his intellect and his accuracy. You know, if he don't write it, if he doesn't write it, and you're a writer, Paul, so you know.
Yeah.
If y'all don't write it, we can't talk it.
But it's a combination of everything good. You guys brought so much to it. It's been so great talking with you. And
yay!
And you can follow you on social media. You are you're on Instagram. What's your Instagram handle again?
It's Kid from Kid and Play.
There it is.
We got stuff popping. And I appreciate what y'all doing, man. And you know, Paul, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
you know, I'm already a big fan of yours. And Amy, she's like Queen Thorough. That's her
name.
She's
the best. She is the best. And we're going to do a thing. You're going to be in this thing that we're doing that's coming out in a couple months, this Scroll Wheel Time interactive thing. It's good. You're great. You're awesome in it. You already,
come on.
It's so good. All right, great.
Thank you for making one of my favorite movies ever. Thank you.
Come on. All right. Much love, y'all.
See you later. Bye. Thanks so much. Oh my gosh, this has been awesome, Amy. So great to talk to Chris. It was so great. Talk to me about this movie. Obviously, we love it. We've heard so much now about this film. We haven't even gotten to get into the nitty gritty of just some of the great characters in it. John Witherspoon,
Robin Harris, who we rhapsodized about when we did our Do the Right Thing episode.
Oh, and you know, Robin Harris, one of the interesting things was Spike had shown Reggie a cut of Do the Right Thing, and that's how Reggie got hip to him in this film. And he died 9 days after this movie was released, Robin Harris. And then Reggie went on and executive produced Bebe's Kids, which I never realized was done after Robin had died. Faison Love does his voice in that, which I did not know.
Yeah, and you know, Robin's death is kind of this framing device around the Pajama Jammy Jam. And he was kind of talking about it nicely, but one of the notes that New Line Cinema did give is they thought Robin's delivery was too hard to understand, that it was just too much of a dialect. And they were like, you can't have that guy be that character. And he fought to make sure that Robin was the dad. And I think Robin's scenes are some of the best scenes in the movie. I mean...
Oh, yeah. And seemingly completely improvised, too, from everything that I kind of read. And... You know, there's such a funny scene. And again, another post-credit scene, like the beating happens over the credits. You just hear it like over, which makes me laugh.
I mean, there's so many little clips I want to play, but I don't know if our video stuff is working okay. But, you know, one of the things I really admire about this film is even as it is this big, fun, bright teen movie, I think that Reggie does such a good job of kind of lacing in real life for a teenager, you know, kind of putting it in what it was like, you know, to be, say, a black teenager getting stopped by the cops, which is such a recurrent theme in this movie. And so I wanted to play a clip, if our stream is working, of a scene where the cops first arrest Kid when he is at the party with all of the rich people and George Clinton.
Look, officer, it was just an accident.
And we don't want to press charges.
Well, these kids have been in a few accidents this evening. I don't think you should let this slide by.
They need discipline, not solitary confinement.
That's true.
Thank you very much. Too scared to make a statement.
They're not going to talk?
Nope.
They're not going to press charges?
Nope.
You perpetrators were very lucky tonight. Apparently, these people aren't going to press charges. So you're going to get up, go home, and go to bed. But before you do, I want you to repeat after me.
What?
I am. What? I am.
Come on, with feeling.
I am.
Somebody.
Somebody.
Really?
This is ridiculous.
All right, that's good. Now get up and go home. Beat it.
I mean, it's just so sharply written, this whole scene. You know, to have a comedy that is a big, bright comedy and figure out how to write in bits where it talks about, like, condescension, stereotyping, getting it in there very lightly, making it funny, keeping it in the rhythm so it's not stopping for a very special moment. But it's just so perceptive and intelligent. And the way, I love how that audience crowd, you know, the fussy old people, have been glaring at Kid for rapping and being like, oh, yeah, this horrible modern music, but immediately pivot to his defense and take his side against, you know, what they find just to be this encroachment.
Yeah, and this is what a lot of people in the chat were saying, like that was a really powerful moment for them as a kid to see that and to be like, it is a really cool moment. And the movie, I think, is very light touches on all of this stuff. It's not like hitting you over the head. It's like, it's still a funny scene, but it's saying something. And, you know, from the Reagan stuff to that, it's all peppered throughout the whole film. And I thought it was interesting, maybe we're talking about like what this movie kind of launched, but I have a clip of Kid and Play after the movie came out, or right when the movie came out. They were doing like kind of like, hey, come see our movie. And this is maybe an idea of like not knowing exactly where the movie's going to go, but what they're thinking about.
Every day was doing a music video.
All in all, it was a great experience. We enjoyed it.
We're looking forward to doing it again, if the price is right.
We might be able to make House Party 2 or...
How about rapping?
Breaking too? 3, Electric
rapping.
Boogaloo. I don't know.
Boogaloo.
This is a lovely idea. Like, you know, it's like, this is this movie. Like, it did. It created so many of these films. People didn't want to get rid of these characters. I mean, there's 5 movies in. They're in the first 3. They've popped up in number 5. We'll kind of talk about where their characters show up, but it's like they spun off movies and cartoons. And I wanted to talk a little bit about this cartoon because you have a clip of this cartoon, right, Amy?
I did. I just pulled the opening credits because I thought they captured so much of the great energy.
Tear it up, so come on, here we go.
Stay calm, don't get along. Gonna relax your ladies with a deadly charm.
Wanna go to work on your fellas too. Make you wanna do the things we do. Cause when a kid and play, it's in your town.
You gotta
keep rocking all day, all night. Cause we're different to life.
Dynamite on the mic, so shake it.
Your butt shake it down. We've got the best music all around.
Hurts the producer, Wiz is the DJ. Roll with Kid and Play, now everybody sing.
I mean, I think you're just going to be hard-pressed to find anyone that can traverse this many genres. I mean, they just really, they did it all. And it still resonates. It doesn't, like, you know, it's not like a flash in the pan. I think there's a lot of things always that are quick money grabs and stuff like that, you know. And this is, it has this kind of amazing lasting staying power to the whole
thing. It's true. And, you know, unlike a lot of Saturday morning cartoons, you know, this one was inspired by a movie that was really well reviewed by critics. I had actually a really hard time finding a negative review of this movie. Everybody came out and they were like, that was really fun. Siskel aside. So here's, let's pull up the clip of the one that I did find. And here, this is from a review of House Party. It just says, House Party is determined to show us that for all their appalling language and, shall we say, informal manners, these are good kids at heart. And the review actually seems annoyed by the fact that these kids are so good. He says, this takes the form of Kid's complex dual wooing of the two sexiest girls at the party. He's got both of them on his hands, and all he can do is sit there patiently while being lectured on how birth control works. And then he just says, you know, there's not much else going on in this amiable but overlong and underplotted movie. That's about as harsh as it got. It like almost like they were just expecting a different film.
Yeah, and like, you know, I think it's also like that thing of like an older reviewer trying to like understand what kids are like, and they're, yeah, it's not for them at all. People want to just bring up too in the chat that like John Witherspoon is doing like three different conversations at once in the phone scene, and that scene, he is so good in it. Amy, we're coming a little bit to the end here, but I wanted to ask the question that we ask every time that we talk about a movie. We know if a movie is good if it has a Simpsons clip. Simpsons has been inspired by it. Were the Simpsons inspired by House Party?
Oh, were they inspired by House Party?
Is there a Simpsons clip, I guess I should say?
Okay. Technically, no, there is no Simpsons clip. However, the inspiration question is one I find quite interesting.
Okay.
You see, House Party comes out in spring of 1990. And right at spring of 1990, another really interesting historical thing is happening, which is that The Simpsons are wrapping up their very first season. And they're suddenly all over the zeitgeist. The Simpsons are huge. I actually pulled this clip from a newspaper article because I love the first line. We're thankful that the Batman craze died a quick death, but did he have to be replaced by that yellow menace, Bart Simpson, and that green menace, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? The idea that Batman craze could have died. Oh, amazing 1990 predictions. So what's happening here in 1990? Is a couple things. Like, here, let's go through the slides and I'll just talk about them as we get there. Sorry, I should have said that. The last line of that paragraph, by the way, is how long until Shorts, one of the major food groups in Webster's, incorporates cowabunga. So I did actually look this up in Webster's dictionary, and they have not yet incorporated cowabunga. They had no
Thank
entry
goodness.
For that.
Okay.
I needed to check. Anyways, this really was the time of bootleg Bart Simpson's shirt, because it was just huge and everywhere, and there wasn't that quite much merchandise yet. So illegal Bart Simpson shirts everywhere, being seized by federal dudes, as this newspaper article says.
Federal dudes? Who is writing this paper?
You know, I love newspapers.com. Love going through the archives. But one of the versions of the Simpsons shirts that got spun out was something that people were calling Black Bart, and it was a Simpsons shirt where Bart Simpson was instead Black. And these are like a lot of, you know, positive, fun, wow, really kind of cool t-shirts. So I have a few of them that I'm going to show you guys, of these bootleg Black Bart Simpson shirts. Talk about Mandela.
This is so interesting.
Talking about Bart X.
Yeah. Wow.
Busta Moves, say no to drugs.
This is really fascinating.
It is. And so then these shirts started, as happens today, think pieces, right? And here's where House Party comes back into the fold, because these two things are hip at the same time. So they're doing articles about these bootleg shirts, and they're interviewing, if you look up close at it, they're interviewing Reggie about this. They're asking Reggie what he thinks about like this moment in time and, you know, this collusion of pop culture and Black culture, and like, where is culture going? And so I think I pulled a close up. So Reggie's in that first one talking. And then here's this one about the sky high hair a la Simpson is all the rage, but some say they sported it before Bart. And here is where Kid actually does get folded back into the conversation, because they start quoting him in his hair and saying, you know what? This hair actually, before Bart Simpson, belonged to Kid. And also Marge. I love that he just pointed to Marge as an example.
Yeah.
But so there was kind of this synergy of like Kid and his hair and the Simpsons all having this shared pop cultural conversation in the spring of 1990. And one person actually wrote about Kid, and she said something that I liked a lot. She kind of wrapped it all together. She said that Kid has been compared to both Tom Hanks and Bart Simpson, which I adore that. You know, I think he has not just the Bart Simpson type of hair, but he had, I think, this Tom Hanks likability that really shines through. In House Party. And so because we've already talked about like Tom Hanks too, it just felt like perfect to pull this little clip up about Kid and House Party. And then, of course, you could maybe say that if there was anything you would point to as a Simpsons acknowledgement of House Party and the culture that was now taking over the airwaves because of movies like House Party, because of the songs on the radio, it would be that the year after House Party comes out, the Simpsons launch the Bartman, their own dance. So let's watch a little bit of the Bartman.
Now I'm in the house, feeling good to be home, till Lisa starts blowing that damn saxophone. And if it was mine, you know they'd take it away. But still I'm feeling good, so that's okay. I'm up in my room, just a-singing a song. Listen to the kick drum kicking along. Yeah, Lisa likes jazz, she's
your number one fan, but I know I'm bad, cause I do the fart man. Hey everybody, did I remind you?
Wow.
Do the fart man. Everybody back and forth from side to side. Do the fart man.
So I think you can officially say that thanks to the music on the radio, thanks to House Party, thanks to The Simpsons now folding it in, I guess, and acknowledging it, there's no mistaking that by 1991, hip-hop culture is mainstream pop culture.
So basically, this is the first shot over the bow, and House Party breaks through, like, through, you know, and in a major, major way. I love that kind of connection. And I think it's only fair to say, if you've heard us talking so much tonight about House Party, you might feel like, well, maybe I want to, you know, own a piece of this. And and you probably can, because let's take a look at the real house from House Party, which was for sale a couple of years ago. Right, Amy?
It was. It's actually not incredibly far from my house, and it made me really want to go. So
it was sold 4 years ago.
About this. It looks like he filmed House Party just really in that house. The interiors look exactly the same. It doesn't look like it was that much of a set for a lot of it, except for the dancing, as Peter's saying. Yeah, there's the door frame. I checked, it's the same wooden beams. This is the house.
And it's sold for, I mean, John Witherspoon lived next door and he bought that house for $15,000. And that house was, I think, in the millions at that point now. Mm-hmm. Some things have changed. Amy, it's been so great chatting with you about this movie. It's been so great to talk to Reggie and Chris about their experiences in this. It's such a fun movie and so exciting to see it have life now, so many years later. I want to give a big, giant thank you to the people behind the scenes that you don't see. Molly, who's in the chat, talking to everybody in the chat. Devin, who's engineering everything. And our producer, Josh, who is just making sure this all runs smoothly. We have a great team, and we appreciate all of them. Devin, show yourself. Molly, show yourself. You guys didn't take a shower for nothing. There we go. Oh, yeah, there he goes. In the hacker setting. It's so great to see them all there. Thank you, Amy. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.